This episode was recorded for my UK column show. Please keep us independent by going to support.ukcolumn.org.
This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
You were telling me that you were just recently in the Amazon.
Yeah, I went down to the UN COP30 climate summit. They held it in Belém, apparently as a political favor to the governor of the state of Pará, who apparently had done some favors for Lula, the communist wannabe dictator of Brazil. So it was interesting. I mean, they apparently plowed $1 billion into preparing the city for this. They were originally expecting 100,000 people. And, you know, it's not a huge city. It's in the middle of the Amazon rainforest. Infrastructure is not very good. So it was interesting. But somehow we made it through. I know, you know, the folks in Africa will be a little bit more used to that stuff. Of course, I've lived in Africa and I've lived in Brazil, so it wasn't a surprise to me. But I was down there with some Americans and they were impressed with how things worked. So,
but tell me about the actual event.
Well, it was interesting on a whole bunch of different levels. One of the things that I've been tracking this whole time is the spiritual angle of this, and I've watched the evolution where they're more and more every year they come out of the closet with this. You know, it first really hit me in 2010 in Cancun because it started with a prayer, and I thought, oh, this is great. We're going to start the climate summit with a prayer. And Cristiana Figueres, who at the time was the executive secretary of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, which is both the treaty from 1992 that created this whole process and also the bureaucracy that runs this whole process. So it's a little bit confusing. UNFCCC. So she opens up with a prayer and she says, "Dear Ixchel," she said, the Mayan goddess of tapestries and creativity, "please help us weave a creative tapestry of solutions for the climate crisis." I thought, that's interesting. So I whip out my laptop and, you know, who is this Ixchel? Turns out Ixchel was the Mayan goddess associated with cannibalism and war and human sacrifice. So I thought that was really appropriate to open the climate summit with a prayer to the god of cannibalism and human sacrifice. And I kept noticing more and more of this paganism, more and more of this occultism, this new ageism. And you know, in my defense, this was only the second climate summit that I had been to doing journalism, right? I had just graduated from journalism school because a lot of this stuff had happened before. If you go back all the way to the 1992 climate summit, the original Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, my colleague at the New American Magazine, William Jasper, covered that because I was still in elementary school at the time. But he describes how they unveiled this new Ark of Hope with a new Ten Commandments, and they had a sacred earth charter and all this stuff. So this stuff's been going on for a long time. But now fast forward to the COP30 in the Amazon. Right. One of the reasons they said they held it in the Amazon was because there's so many indigenous people and there's so much indigenous knowledge and indigenous wisdom. And that was a big theme of the conference, right? The implicit understanding of everybody was that biblical Christianity was the problem, that this worldview that man is made in the image of God and the planet is here for us rather than we being here for the planet, this is the cause of the environmental devastation and so on. And so they had all these different pagan leaders, and they had all this interfaith stuff. It was a really big part of the conference. And essentially, everybody was welcome as long as you agree to rally behind saving Mother Earth. If you think that's crazy or silly or you know, just dangerous, then, of course, you're not welcome. But for me, the perfect spiritual encapsulation of what was going on down there. And again, we've noticed this trend. It was in, I think, Poland or Madrid, where the whole crew that I had with me said, man, the spiritual energy here is just really dark. Like, what's going on? So this time around, the Communist Chinese Party unveils a gigantic statue. And you know, people can't see it right now. Maybe you can put it up on the screen. Or if you go to my X account, I have it pinned to the top right now, AlexNewman_JOU. This giant, they called it a fusion of the Chinese dragon spirit with the Brazilian jaguar spirit. And it was supposed to be the official dragon jaguar guardian spirit of the COP30. And it is this freakish creature with devil horns and fangs sticking out, holding the whole world in its hands with the world saying COP30 on it. And I mean, it was so blatant, like all over Brazilian social media, people were like, hey, wait a minute, this is a devil, this is a demon. Why are you putting this in our country? Brazil belongs to Jesus, not this guardian spirit, whatever. So for me, that was one of the big takeaways. I know for most people, the thing that they're looking for in terms of takeaways is the final agreement and what happened there. So just a quick bit on that, Germ. Obviously, the U.S. government boycotted the summit. The Trump administration, just like they did with the G20, right? Except this was even more. We didn't even send a low-level embassy lackey. We didn't send anybody. I reached out to the State Department because we went around looking for the U.S. delegation, because typically they've been very friendly with us when Trump is in power. So we're looking for the Americans, trying to find out what's going on, and there are no Americans. So, you know, we go and ask the Australians and the Swedes and the Brits and the Chinese, where are the Americans? Oh, there's no Americans here. So reached out to the State Department. They said, yeah, this conference is dedicated to bankrupt the United States. So we didn't send anybody. There's no U.S. delegation, which is interesting for two reasons, right? A lot of the globalists there, including Cristiana Figueres, who I mentioned earlier, said, hey, this is great. The Trump administration isn't here. They can't obstruct progress on an ambitious deal. We should do a big deal. And then once the president of the United States is gone and they bring in a new president, they're all still going to be bound by this. Jean Hsu from the Center for Biological Diversity made that explicit. She said, hey, the U.S. is still in the UNFCCC. Let's pass a really great roadmap to phase out fossil fuels. And then when Trump is gone, it'll be still binding on the United States. So that was one approach to this. The other approach was, hey, of course we shouldn't send anybody there. It's ridiculous. So they weren't able to get any huge progress in the final deal, but there was baby steps, right? They got a whole bunch of implementation monitoring frameworks, things like this, to monitor whether governments are fulfilling their climate commitments. They got a reference to the carbon budget, and they said 4/5 of our carbon budget has already been burned. So for folks who don't understand what that means, they claim that human emissions of carbon dioxide are causing climate change, and that we have already emitted 4/5 of the allowable amount that humans can emit before we destroy the planet, I guess, or whatever. So we only have 1/5 left, and the United States and Europe and other advanced countries are not allowed to burn more than their fair share. So most of that's got to go to India, China, et cetera. But the real action, Germ, was in the side agreements. So they had a huge coalition of governments, including a lot of U.S. allies. They adopted an agreement on what they call information integrity, which is basically a censorship manifesto. The lead U.N. official who was dealing with this, a lady by the name of Charlotte Scadden, said it's not even just the people questioning the climate science now who we need to target. Now it's even the people who question the climate solutions, right? So even some of the people at the conference were probably going to find themselves in the crosshairs of the censors. They found another side agreement led by Colombia and the Dutch to phase out fossil fuels. So they'll have their initial meeting in Colombia in April, and that's to completely eliminate fossil. And they all know that's not going to happen, right? The Arabs and the Chinese are not going to be eliminating fossil fuels. It's just for the suckers in the West. They got an agreement between Brazil and the European Union and a whole bunch of other governments to start integrating national carbon markets into an international carbon market. So a lot of stuff there that didn't really make it into the news in America. Very, very important stuff. And my big takeaway is they're just trying to hold down the fort until Trump is gone, and then they'll get back to pedal to the metal on this climate scam.
I don't understand why people get offended by this. I mean, particularly in South Africa, they were really up in arms. Oh, why is Trump doing this? It's a good thing, because these events are just attempts to basically accelerate global control, Agenda 2030, ultimately sustainable development, which is not in our best interests.
Absolutely. And you know, to be clear, I'm very pleased that the Trump administration not only didn't play along with this, he dropped a nuclear bomb. It made my job very fun. You know, I'm going around supposed to be asking questions, trying to learn what's going on. During the climate summit, Trump did a speech in front of a bunch of Arabs and said, you know, this climate hoax is so bad. I think it's a climate conspiracy. They should be investigated. Maybe they are being investigated. Oh, right. So I got to ask people, hey, Trump says they might be investigating a climate conspiracy. What do you think about this? And, you know, whether they are or not, I don't have any information on that. But here's the big concern that I have, Germ. Trump, on his first day in office in the second term, got us out of a whole bunch of these UN agreements. So under the UNFCCC, that's the kind of the foundation, if you will, the 1992 treaty. Every year they bring together all the governments of the world for these COPs, and they come up with a new agreement. So Trump got us out of all those subsequent agreements. They're not even really treaties. What they do is they just tack them on to the back of the original treaty. But we're still in the UNFCCC. So I'm all in favor of boycotting this. In fact, I would mock it relentlessly. I would have sent somebody, as long as we're still in the UNFCCC, just to make fun of them and just to kind of show them the science and what a fraud this all is. But we need to get out of the UNFCCC. This is what I said on Glenn Beck's program yesterday. It's the biggest radio show in the United States, so I'm sure Trump heard my comments. We need to, if we're going to make this permanent, we need to leave the UNFCCC. Because if we don't, that treaty was ratified by the U.S. Senate, right? And if the treaty was ratified by the U.S. Senate under our Constitution, and there's a caveat there, but it's considered binding on the United States. So we've got to pull out of that. And we also have to act immediately to protect the children. Because one of the things that they were all talking about here is, you know, yes, it's true, Americans don't really care about this, Americans don't really believe us, but we're going to educate the children, not just to understand climate change, but to get involved in the action. And they're actually talking, they were talking at this summit, the UNESCO, the UN's Education Agency, the OECD, and the Marxist Brazilian Education Ministry came together and said, we're going to install climate literacy into the international standardized assessments. So I agree. Trump should boycott it. We should relentlessly mock this thing. But we need to go all the way so that when he leaves power, we don't get the same thing that happened when Joe Biden took over, which is all of it gets undone and we're right back where we started.
I can't help but think that you've created a beautiful segue to how our kids are being indoctrinated to death.
Well, I think, and you and I discussed this on the one that didn't work out because of our internet troubles, I think this is the most important issue, Jerm, because, and they understand this too. If you listen to them talk, if you listen to the things they were saying, you know, they had a whole bunch of UNESCO bigwigs, a whole bunch of bigwigs from Education International, which is the global union of teachers unions. They're all saying that education is the most important part of climate action because that's how we're going to capture the hearts and minds of the next generation. So the UN is very active on this front.
Who in their right mind, Alex, would say, oh, that sounds like a terrible idea?
if you look at what they're teaching the children, it is obscene. It's happening in South Africa. It's happening in the United States. It's happening all over the world. And the UN has a major hand in this. At least in the United States, very few people realize that the UN is involved in education. They think it's their local school board, right? It hasn't been your local school board for generations. It's been state, federal, and now increasingly international levels of governance. And the things that they're teaching children are, in many cases, outright demonic. You know, to go back to the theme we started with, the UN has the World Core Curriculum written by Robert Mueller, the Assistant Secretary General of the UN, that he himself said was based entirely on the teachings of Alice Bailey, the founder of the Lucifer Publishing Company, and this spiritual entity she was talking to. She called it an ascended master, called the Tibetan Jval Kul. So this is the reality that we're dealing with. And climate change is a perfect pretext for all of this, right? For the spiritual absurdity, for the political idiocy. It's a global problem, so it's a global solution that we need. And then for the economic transformation, because they say human activity is what's causing climate change, so government has to take control of all human activity. So it's a perfect trifecta, and the indoctrination of children is where it's at. You know, they've looked at the polls. They know Americans don't believe it. Overwhelmingly, Americans don't even believe that human activity is causing this climate change. And so they understand they have to get the hearts and minds of our children. And that was on full display there.
Climate change, aka sustainable development, is the ultimate agenda. Everything fits into it.
That's right. And you can see this just by reading their documents. You know, the 2030 agenda, I did a big article about this in The New American in 2015. It was so obvious. If you just read it, it's so clear what they're doing. And there's, you know, some nice phrases there for the people who don't really think things through. We're going to solve world hunger. We're going to solve world poverty. Okay, yeah, and I'm the Pope, right? I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. They know they're not going to
Hold on. But that's the joke that I was making. These headlines, they sound great.
Of course.
What's wrong with you, Alex? Don't you want to end world poverty?
Yeah. And that's the scam, right? They just give little lines like that are so superficially appealing. But when you just stop and think about them for a moment, it's obviously inherently ridiculous. And what people aren't stopping to think about is that these kinds of grandiose promises, first of all, it's impossible to fulfill them. Second of all, if they were going to be fulfilled, or if they were even going to attempt to fulfill them, it would require essentially a blank check drawn on your liberty, on your bank account, on your children's mind. You have to give them total power to do these things. And thirdly, if you actually look at the stated goal and then you look at the means they're using to pursue that goal, it's obviously ridiculous. And this is so clear. I taught economics for 12 years. You can plot almost a perfect line showing the level of economic freedom that a country has and the level of prosperity that it has. It's a very simple formula. More economic freedom leads to more prosperity. And yet, if you read the 2030 agenda, if you look at the idiocy coming out of the climate agreements, if you look at what the UN itself says about land ownership, about the economy, about everything, this is a recipe for poverty. This is the kind of policy framework that exists in North Korea and Zimbabwe and Venezuela and Cuba, some of the poorest countries on the face of the earth. And then incidentally, they say they're going to take good care of the environment using these kinds of policies. All you have to do is use your brain for 2 seconds. What are the cleanest countries in the world? Which countries have the cleanest environment, the cleanest rivers, the nicest forests, the most protected environment, the cleanest air? Well, of course, it's the freest countries. It's the United States. It's Switzerland. It's New Zealand. It's Australia. It's Canada. It's Japan, right? It's the countries that have a free market and at least still some tenuous connection to biblical principles. The countries that are the filthiest, that are the most polluted and destroyed, are the countries that have communism, socialism, totalitarianism, whether it's China, whether it's North Korea, whether it's the Central Asian stands that are, you know, environmentally a wasteland, they all have in common total government control over everything and not serious respect for private property rights. So if the stated goals are what they claim they are, ending poverty, ending hunger, cleaning up the environment, we know how to do those things. Freedom, liberty, private property rights, biblical principles, etc. And so very clearly, I mean, these people aren't stupid. They're many things, but they're not stupid. It's like, you know, how can people today promote communism and still claim that that's going to bring about equality and prosperity? We've seen this experiment 100 times in the last 100 years. It always produces the same thing. So we're being scammed here on a massive level. And unfortunately, there are still enough people who either believe it or who depend on the scam, so they pretend to believe it, to make it all possible.
And part of sustainable development actually is taking control of the school, of the schools and the curriculums.
Oh, it is. That, I would argue, is the most important part, because you can't do all the other stuff unless you brainwash the people enough to agree to it. And this is clearly stated in their own documents, Jerm. You know, we're talking about Agenda 2030, so let's start there. Goal number four is all about education. There's 17 sustainable development goals. Goal number four is very clear. Equitable, inclusive, and quality education for all, which, you know, to go back to your point, that sounds wonderful. What does it mean? What do they mean by quality? What do they mean by equity? What do they mean by inclusive? And they mean very different things than a normal person would assume, right? And then they go further. Then they specify what they mean. They say all learners by 2030. Notice all learners. These people discuss these, you know, where the comma should be for hours on end. Every word in this thing is well thought out. They fully understand what they mean. So when they say all learners, they mean all learners. They mean not one homeschool child in Oklahoma or Cape Town will be allowed to escape this indoctrination. And then they say they have to be so brainwashed, they won't just submit to this, but the term they use is they will promote sustainable development, right? Very clearly, they're telling you, we're going to brainwash all children. We're going to brainwash them to the point where they don't just accept what we're doing passively. They promote our agenda. And then they go on to list that. And again, to your point, some of it sounds nice. Gender equality, which, you know, normal people don't realize that means force all the women into the workforce, smash the nuclear family, have the government raise the children. You know, they demonize what they call unpaid care work, which just means mothering, right? So very clear agenda. They talk about human rights, which, again, means something very differently than normal people assume. So we here in America, we have a long tradition of human rights. We say in our Declaration of Independence, God gave us rights and government exists to protect those rights. Those rights are life, liberty, property, things like this. And of course, those ideas come straight from the Bible. How do you have a right to life? Well, God said, thou shalt not murder. How do you have a right to property? Well, God said, thou shalt not steal. So that's the foundation of our rights and freedoms, our human rights in the United States. When you read the UN's documents, very clearly the exact opposite conception of rights. If you go to Article 29, they'll tell you none of your rights and freedoms may be used contrary to the purposes and principles of the United Nations. What? So in other words, you have no rights. It's utterly preposterous. You go to Article 26, they say education shall be compulsory. What? You have a compulsory right. We're going to force you to exercise your right at gunpoint. And then they say, education shall further the activities of the United Nations. Same thing in Article 26. So you have a right to a forced education that promotes the United Nations. So think about this for a minute, Jerm. I homeschool my 6 children. We use a wonderful program called Classical Conversations, and it does not promote or further the activities of the United Nations. So what does that mean? Under a plain interpretation of the text of the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights, it means we're depriving our children of human rights as defined by the UN, and that's a very dangerous thing to be involved in. So you keep going through Agenda 2030, goal number 4. They literally say global citizenship. So all your kids have to learn to be good global citizens, and on it goes. Now you go back further. We talked a little bit about the 1992 conference. That's where they came out with the UNFCCC and also Agenda 21. So Agenda 2030, that was the 15-year plan. Agenda 21 is the UN's 100-year plan. And again, it's right in the text. Anybody can go to the UN's website right now. Don't believe me because I'm saying it. Go look it up. Agenda 21, chapter 36 says, education is indispensable to changing people's attitudes. They say it has to foment the UN's approved attitudes, values, and behaviors on sustainable development. They say it has to include spiritual development, going back to Robert Mueller and his weird stuff with Alice Bailey. So it's not me saying that brainwashing your children is the key to their plan for the world. They are telling you that in agreements signed by your government, and all you have to do is read them. It's all right there for everybody to see.
So what? So pushing back means that you need to homeschool or at least go to a private school?
I would argue yes. And even that is not going to be pain-free in the near future. Just a few weeks ago, Jerm, the UN did exactly what I said they were going to do, what I've been saying they were going to do for years. I've given talks all over the country and even in other countries about the fact that the UN was going to target homeschoolers. How did I know? Because I read their documents. And so just a few weeks ago, UNESCO puts out a report called Homeschooling Through a Human Rights Lens. And again, I encourage people, don't take my word for it. Just go read it yourself. They are very clear. If governments are going to allow homeschooling, they say, and they, you know, they love the German model where you just kidnap children and throw the parents in jail if they try to homeschool their children. But if governments are going to allow homeschooling, they say, it has to comply with UN demands on a whole range of different issues. It has to teach UN-approved values. It has to teach UN and government-approved education content. It's right there in the text of the report. Here's some fun fact for your viewers, Jerm. It actually admits on the acknowledgments page that it was prepared under the supervision of a North Korean communist. I wish I was kidding. So it doesn't say he's a North Korean communist. But
it's just coincidental.
Oh, of course. Right. And, you know, the North Koreans are famous for loving human rights. Right. So, I mean, obviously they know how we should be educating our children. But it gives the guy's name. It's like Chang Kwal or something. So I looked him up. And sure enough, he's the chief of the education policy section at UNESCO. But I looked him up. He was born in North Korea. He's got a degree from a North Korean university, and he worked at the North Korean Ministry of Education before taking a senior role at UNESCO. And I wish I was making this stuff up, but I'm not. So I encourage people to read this. I did a big article about this for the Epoch Times, a big article about it for the New American. It hasn't gotten a lot of attention yet, but I would argue, yes, it is absolutely essential that people pull their children from this demonic indoctrination system. And none of these problems are new. I mean, we can go back to the history. The very people who dreamed up the idea that the government should educate our children always had this evil, subversive agenda. But today, it's just in your face. And I don't believe that you can be a responsible parent who loves God and loves your children and continue to subject them to this horrific system that's dumbing them down, indoctrinating them, preparing them for slavery, and really inducting them into the occult, not even to mention the grotesque sexualization. I mean, they're literally teaching kindergarten boys that they might have been born in the wrong body and that castration is the solution. 10 years ago, they would have been thrown in jail for something like this. Today, they're trying to throw us in jail for saying, no, you can't castrate our sons, thank you very much. So this is how crazy it's gotten, and it's all a direct result of the indoctrination.
Alex, I don't remember the term transgender or transgenderism back in the 90s. It didn't exist.
It did not exist.
No, it just came out of nowhere.
That's right. And I mean, you and I both, we both remember what life was like before this, right? I lived in 8 different countries on 4 continents. I went mostly to international school. So I went to school with every kind of kid you could imagine. Indians, Pakistanis, Japanese, Chinese, Israelis, Europeans of every variety, Americans, South American, every kind of kid. Never, not one single time in 12 years of school, however long I was in there, I got kicked out in 10th grade. I never met a child who was even slightly confused about his or her gender, so-called. It was a non-thing. And like you said, the word wasn't even in the dictionary. So this is a new craze. And now, depending on whose data you believe, there are surveys in America showing that over 50% of our young people now identify as one of these letters in the alphabet, LGBTQ plus whatever. And you see this even in the most conservative states in our country, like Utah is a good example. Utah is one of the most conservative states in America. Super majority of Republicans in both houses of their legislature. Every statewide office controlled by Republicans. Every county except one entirely controlled by Republicans. And yet, in a 5-year period from 2015 to 2020, there was a, and I got this data directly from members of the state school board when I was speaking at the Capitol, a 10,000% increase in the number of underage girls who were going through medical transitions. They were being put on testosterone. They were being put on puberty blockers. They were having their breasts removed. They were having their genitals surgically mutilated. This is a 10,000% increase in a 5-year period in one of the most conservative states in the country. So this is clearly an agenda. It's clearly coming through the schools, and it is clearly ubiquitous. In other words, it's everywhere. The only places where this stuff hasn't yet reached is really the Islamic countries, which I think have quite wisely said, no, we're not going to be teaching our children that.
Yeah, so it's not organic, is what you're saying.
Oh, precisely. And it's coming down from the top, right? What are the odds that all over the world, people just woke up and said, we need to castrate our sons. We need to give double mastectomies to our daughters and hysterectomies to our daughters. The odds are zero, right? Zero. This is coming down from an international high-level operation. And it is beyond cruel. It is criminal. The people responsible for mutilating these children and for indoctrinating these children to believe they should be mutilated are committing crimes against the children, against the countries, and against the families.
What do you think is the long game?
Well, it's going to sound weird to people who haven't really spent a lot of time looking at this, but a lot of the leading luminaries behind this movement will tell you the end goal is transhumanism. It is, if you can transcend your sex, you can certainly transcend your humanity. And people like Martine Rothblatt calls himself Martine Rothblatt, a transgender guy who pretends to be a woman now. He's actually got a book, From Transgender to Transhuman. So I think there's a lot of sub-agendas. You see this a lot with these elitist pushes for stuff. They create a system of incentives where everybody's got an incentive to go along, right? So the big pharmaceutical industry has an incentive because they want to make money. Hey, the more of these kids we can get on puberty blockers, and the more of these kids we can castrate, the more of these kids we can put on hormones, the more money we're going to make. And there's huge money to be made here, right? So they're making money. The population control zealots think, ooh, this is great. The more children we can castrate, the less babies we will have in the future, right? The more little girls we can rip their uterus out, the less babies we will have in the future. The forces working to destroy the family love this, right? And I think this is really one of the key agendas, too. The destruction of the family has been a goal of totalitarians, very openly expressed, going back to at least Karl Marx, and I would say even back to Adam Weishaupt and even before that. But the destruction of the family is so clearly encapsulated in the transgender agenda. When it was just the homosexual thing, they say, a child can have 2 dads, a child can have 2 moms. I would reject that assessment, obviously. I think a child ideally needs a mom and a dad, and I think it's cruel to deliberately deprive them of either a mother or a father. They're both absolutely essential to the proper and full development of a child. But what they're saying now is a whole giant leap beyond that. Now they're saying there's no such thing as mothers. There's no such thing as fathers. You're a birthing person. You're a cog in a machine. You have absolutely no right to help guide your children's development. And if there is no male and there is no female, obviously there can't be moms and dads. And so the nuclear family essentially is obliterated if this ideology is taken to its logical conclusion. So I think all of those things are key, but I think really the driving force, and again, I know this sounds weird to a lot of people, but I think really the driving force is this satanic push for transhumanism that ultimately goes back to the original lie that Satan said in the garden, right? And if you listen to these people, they say it clearly. I don't know whether they're aware or not, but they say, we're going to live forever. We're not going to die. We're going to upload our consciousness into a Optimus robot or something. And they say, we're going to be as gods. Yuval Noah Harari's got a whole book on this, Homo Deus. We're going to be man gods. We're going to evolve into this next phase, and Homo sapiens will go by the wayside. That's exactly what Satan said in Genesis chapter 3 to Eve, right? Ye shall be as gods. You will not surely die. I mean, it's the same lie from the pit of hell. And transgenderism is an interim step. I should add that the communists also regard this as a part of the revolutionary process of dismantling society. And I've got some of them on video talking about why trans liberation is essential for the revolution. So all these different agendas converge, where every little special interest group has its own incentive to join the party. And then those of us who say, wait a minute, this is crazy, you know, then we get marginalized and called bad names and things like that. But of course, it's very obvious what's happening.
Let me play devil's advocate, Alex, if you don't mind. Okay, so let's say that all these advances towards transhumanism are made, and you can live your life without getting sick, and you can live for hundreds of years. What's the problem?
Well, I think there's a clear distinction between technologies that are good and helpful. And I think a lot of modern medical advances are good and helpful. And then there's an entirely different realm where we're talking now about pursuing immortality outside of God, where we're talking about pursuing godhood, which, frankly, the hubris involved in that is astounding. And so, you know, I think technology is really a neutral force. And you know, people hear me talk and they think often I'm a Luddite or I'm anti-technology. I don't have a smartphone. I use a, you know, an old flip phone. People say, oh, you hate technology. I don't hate technology. Technology is just a tool. You know, let's take it to a simpler level. A firearm is a good example, right? A firearm is a piece of technology. It's powerful, and it can be used for good or for evil. In the hands of a decent, honorable person, it can be used to defend innocent women and children from mass murderers and maniacs and rapists. In the tools of evildoers, it can be used as a tool for mass murder. So it just depends on who's using the tool and for what purpose. So a technology that helps you live longer or a higher quality of life, that's great. I think that's fantastic. We should have that. And in fact, that's one of the things that the Western world has been pursuing very successfully, by the way, for centuries. And it's been a great blessing to us. You know, our life expectancy now is no longer, you know, 25 years old. You know, when we get infections, we don't expect our little children to die because we have antibiotics. These things are all great. But when you get into this realm of challenging your creator, or even worse, trying to usurp the role of your creator, like Lucifer, Satan did, now you're talking about something that is, I think, inherently evil. And I don't think God's going to allow it. I mean, you go back to Genesis 11, and we don't know all the details, but you've got this interesting story where God told people to spread out across the face of the whole earth, and they said, no, we're just going to hang out here and just build this big tower. And there's some really interesting remarks in there. It says that they're building it up to the heavens, and if they succeed, then nothing will be out of their reach. What does that mean exactly? I don't know. I don't claim to know. But God actually takes that real seriously, and he comes down and he confuses the languages so that people cannot achieve these goals that they have set for themselves. And I suspect we're going to see something like that at some point in the near future, because the technologies that are now being used and being promoted publicly, by the way, like the genetic engineering of human beings. You know, Klaus Schwab has been talking about as part of his fourth industrial revolution, we can take genetic editing to do different things for ourselves and for our children. Bill Gates has been promoting genetic engineering of babies since at least 2018. He did an article called Gene Editing for Good in Foreign Affairs. This is crazy, in my opinion. Genetic code is something that God wrote and designed for each individual. Okay, it is a divine computer program, if you will. And when humans start messing with that, I think we're entering into the realm of what we should not be doing. I don't trust fallen man to do much when it comes to genetically engineering human beings. And I think it's a recipe for disaster, frankly.
Alex, something that I grapple with, and I ask a number of my guests this question. Do you think some of these individuals, Klaus Schwab, Yuval Harari, Bill Gates, Fauci, wake up in the morning thinking that they themselves are evil? Or do they genuinely believe that they are looking out for humanity?
I think there's a mix of both, honestly, Jerm. I think there are some who are consciously dedicated to the cause of evil. And we've seen that historically in Satanist cults and things like this, where there's an understanding that what they're doing is evil. And I think Karl Marx was a really good example of this. If you read the books Marx and Satan, you see some of his poetry. And he very clearly is like, I hate God. I'm going to destroy what God has created. He says, with Satan, I have cast my deal. The guy is openly a Satanist. And so I think the fruit was very obvious too, right? He's targeting all these institutions that God created, family, country, private property, right? So I think people like that are genuinely conscious about their evil agenda. And I think they enjoy destruction. I think they enjoy causing pain. I think they enjoy the suffering that they inflict on humanity. But I think that's a relatively small segment of the population. My guess would be, and I've never talked to him, my guess would be Klaus Schwab probably falls into that category. But then there are legions and legions of people who are more useful idiots for the cause. And the Bible talks about this. The Bible talks about people who've been taken captive by Satan to do his will. They're essentially slaves of Satan. And the Bible is very clear about this. If you go to Ephesians 6, you read about the spiritual battle that is raging around us. And it actually makes clear that your enemy is not flesh and blood, right? Yes, Klaus Schwab's an evil guy. Bill Gates, obviously, I think a very evil guy. I think they're consciously doing evil. But ultimately, this is just a reflection in the physical realm of something that's happening in the supernatural. Paul says we're dealing with powers, with principalities, spiritual wickedness in high places and the heavenly places, some translations say. And so I think there really is a demonic agenda. I think Satan is a real being as described in the Bible. And I think there is a small group of people on this planet who are knowingly and willingly in league with this agenda. And then there are many others who rationalize this for themselves. And that's the thing, Jerm. I grew up with a lot of these people going to very elite private schools, and they rationalize this. Well, if we have a world government, maybe we can stop war. Maybe if we have a world government, we can end hunger. And so these are people who I think genuinely think they're doing good, but absolutely I believe that there are evildoers who are consciously doing evil.
If you listen to Yuval Harari talking about hackable humans, and I sometimes wonder whether they are making predictions or being sort of futuristic.
One of the guys who's been involved with the World Economic Forum for a long time, Peter Schwartz, he's often considered the world's leading futurist. And he worked with huge companies like Shell Oil. And his job was to come up with plausible scenarios about which way things could go so that the planners could then try to steer things in the direction they want them to go in. So let's take the World Economic Forum's predictions by 2030. Right? Those got a lot of attention. They came out years ago. The original ones, they kind of updated them because the original ones were a little bit too inflammatory. But by 2030, you will own nothing and be happy. I don't believe for an instant that Klaus Schwab thought that this was an organic process. I believe that was their end goal, and they wanted to try to steer things in that direction. And we've seen that many times, even in recent history. So if you go back to, for example, 1962, the U.S. State Department hired a guy called Lincoln Bloomfield to figure out how could we get to a world controlled by a one-world government. The final report was called A World Effectively Controlled by the United Nations. And he predicted that organic trends might lead to that destination within centuries, within hundreds of years. But he said we can accelerate that process using war, crises and the threat of war, because that will shake up national attitudes and will make possible, he said, a revolution in world political arrangements. So I think they come up with their vision for the future, and then they try to steer things in that direction. Now, you all know Harari is an interesting case. I'm often, when I hear him talk, I'm reminded of Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1 gives, I think, a very clear outline of probably what's happening with Yuval Noah Harari and a lot of other people like him. It talks about those who suppress the truth in their unrighteousness, right? It says the attributes of God are plain for all to see. You don't have to have missionaries and Bibles to understand that there is a creator, that he is all powerful, that he is good, that he is loving. These are attributes that anybody can discern, the scripture teaches, from creation. And what the research has shown is that that's absolutely correct. You could take children from any part of the world, doesn't matter what culture, what religion their parents might be, every child everywhere in the world that they have looked at is essentially born with an instinct and an understanding that they were created by a loving, all-powerful, omniscient, benevolent, omnipotent creator. They can't quote scripture for you, but they understand the basic attributes of God. But then in Romans 1, you see this tendency among men to suppress that truth, to suppress that knowledge, because they want to be engaged in wickedness. They want to forget about God and suppress that knowledge. And then you see how God responds to that. He says that he hands them over to a reprobate mind, and then you can see what that results in. It talks about homosexuality, the homosexual revolution, as one of the consequences of being handed over to a reprobate mind by God. And so what do we see in Yuval Noah Harari? Well, he's a homosexual. So I think Romans 1 really helps give a clear picture of what's happening in the minds of a lot of these people. So I don't know that Yuval Noah Harari wakes up in the morning and thinks, ha ha, what could I do to unleash suffering on humanity? I think he has suppressed the truth of God that he knows instinctively, and that has resulted in God handing him over to a reprobate mind. And then we see all of the things that we would expect to see based on what we read in there. And we're seeing that now on a societal basis, right? We're seeing that now. Just go to New York City, right? Go to San Francisco, and you'll see that on full display. And so on the one hand, I think it's partly a judgment from God. And on the other, I think it's partly the cause of judgment from God. And that might sound contradictory, but I think that is what we are actually witnessing here.
What we are witnessing, particularly in Western culture, seems like we are running through a tunnel and the light at the other end of it is actually a train coming towards us.
I get that impression too. And I'm very concerned, Germ, for the future. And I am a firm believer in the sovereignty of God. I have no doubt that God ultimately is in charge of all things, which, some people get offended by that because, they assume that means God is responsible for evil. I think all things will ultimately work for the glory of God. But if I look at the direction that our societies are heading in, and this very much includes South Africa, in some ways, South Africa is even further down the crazy train path than we are in the United States. And the same is true in Western Europe, Australia, Canada. It's bad. And frankly, unless there is some sort of massive awakening, a massive, spiritual revolution where people say, whoa, this is crazy, I foresee some very hard times ahead. It's your metaphorical train crashing into us and leaving utter destruction in its wake. And, the United States, which I study, especially I've been back in the United States for some years now, and I see it very clearly here. We're watching radicalization, polarization. I think the prospect of civil war is almost upon us. We see the destruction, this disintegration of families. I mean, it's terrible. More than half of marriages now are ending in divorce. Children are growing up without parents. The schools are indoctrinating children with horrors. This is going to end in a cataclysm, absent some sort of really miraculous U-turn. And I don't know that we're going to see that. So I share your concerns about where this might all be heading. Ideally, I would like to stop it. I understand that's not up to me. But I do understand that we all have duties to our own children, to our own families, to our societies, to our countries, and to God himself to try to expose and oppose the progress of evil.
I might have this wrong, but I read somewhere that something like 100 million Americans take antidepressants. I mean, that is crazy if that's true.
Yeah, and among the children, it's even worse. You know, suicide is now leading cause of death in whole age groups among our children. And this is unprecedented. Children didn't used to kill themselves, right? Even when I was a kid, which wasn't that long ago, children didn't kill themselves. Children didn't kill each other. This whole thing with the school shootings, that's a new phenomenon. And I think it's a function of several different things, the indoctrination that we're seeing. The mass drugging, right? And so I think there's a cause and effect relationship there. If you look on the boxes of a lot of these psychotropic drugs, they actually tell you can lead to suicidal and homicidal ideation. Well, that sounds like a good idea, right? I mean, it's crazy. And then we have, I think, the very real repaganization, the entry of the demonic and the occult into mainstream consciousness and society. I think all of that is driving it. But we have an incredible so-called mental health crisis in this country. And I think partly that's stirred up by Big Pharma because they want to make a lot of money. But partly it's the result of what we've done to our children now for multiple generations in government schools. We've taught them from the moment they enter the classroom that essentially there is no God, that their life has no more innate value than the life of their pet goldfish. You know, this is a very dangerous worldview that produces nihilism and depression and suicidality and hatred. And ultimately, you know, we're seeing the fruit of that, and it's absolutely terrifying.
I just looked it up, and my 100 million is completely off. It's around 30. Sorry, what does it say? I've just lost it now. 13% of Americans. That's around about 37 million adults in the U.S. Okay, so I'm significantly off.
Well, but that's still a huge number. Yeah.
Yeah, it's still a huge number. But look at this: women have significantly higher rates of depression than men. Why is that? I mean, weren't women liberated, Alex? Why are women aborting a million babies a year and taking antidepressants? I thought they're free.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking to see. And I think it goes back to exactly what we just discussed. They have been indoctrinated to believe that liberation means promiscuity, means, you know, working 9 to 5 for some corporate boss in a cubicle. And they don't realize that, you know, that's not really their calling. That's not really their function. And I'm not suggesting that every woman needs to, you know, have lots of babies or whatever. But ultimately, mothering is the highest calling that one could have. I think C.S. Lewis put it really greatly. He said that, you know, the homemaker is the most important career in the world. All other careers exist to make this one possible. And I agree with that. You know, it brings me great joy. Go ahead.
Sorry. I'm jumping in. But
no.
I was just talking about this a couple of days ago with somebody. At what point did a career become more important than your family?
Yep. And think about how bankrupt that is. What are you going to do with a career? You're going to have a lot of money, you're going to buy a lot of stuff, and then you're going to die lonely. and you can't take any of your stuff with you. So what good did it do if you drove a really nice car or lived in a big house or had a bunch of goofy jewelry hanging around your neck? None at all, right? But you know, the only thing you can take into eternity with you is your children. And really, I mean, you know, the Apostle Paul talks about for those who can remain single their whole lives, remain celibate, you know, that's great. You can dedicate yourself entirely to God. But for most of us, if you're going to burn with lust, you know, it's great to find a spouse. And even God says in early on in Genesis, it's not good for man to be alone, right? God designed us to be in partnership with a spouse, with a lifelong spouse. And family is one of the most important callings that we can have. This was God's design for man. It brings meaning to life. It brings joy to life. And so this terrible lie that, and it's not new, by the way. I mean, my parents' generation got this lie. You know, I talked to my own parents and like, yeah, I can't believe we fell for that stuff. Like, so this is not new. It's just gotten more and more extreme. And it's entirely bankrupt. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't realize that until it's too late. I was just on a program yesterday, and I think the statistic they said was that half of women under 50 who don't yet have kids are not ever planning to have kids. And, you know, that might sound like a good idea when you're 25 and you're not thinking clearly, or you're 30 and you're not thinking clearly, and, you know, your goal in life is to buy more Gucci bags. But, you know, once you get to be 40, 50, and you're running out of time, and then you realize you're going to die alone, and the government's going to be in charge of taking care of you in your old age, suddenly that doesn't seem like such a good idea anymore. So really, I think the lies that have been sold to people are monstrous. The number of lives that have been destroyed as a result of these lies is incalculable. And I think the people promoting these lies did so with malice aforethought. You know, I don't think that these were just well-intentioned people who thought women would be better off liberated. I think they did it with evil intent.
I fall into that category. For the longest time, until just a few years ago, I thought that it's a good idea to wait until having kids and all that sort of thing. The reality, though, if you just spend a few minutes thinking about it, is it's a terrible strategy.
It is. And you know what's ironic, too? This I always thought was really funny. Men who have children tend to make much more money. And men who have more children tend to make much more money. And so it's very ironic that we're told, like, oh, no, you have to first get your career going, and you first have to have a lot of money, and then, and they say this to women, too, and then you can think about maybe settling down and starting a family. I like what Charlie Kirk used to say. He's like, no, get married young, have more children than you can afford, and it's going to be awesome. In my life, that has been absolutely true. I had my first child when I was 23, I believe. And, you know, when I was in high school, I went through Marxism, atheism, all that stuff. But I had my first child when I was 23 and completely changed everything in a good way, right? I went from being an irresponsible, selfish moron to having a concern about something greater than myself. And so now I've got six children and I just adore them. They're, you know, the most important thing to me in this world, other than my wife and, you know, my Lord and Savior. But man, the level of lying and deception that is now ubiquitous in our societies is hard to imagine. And frankly, I'm a little bit embarrassed for having fallen for all that stuff, but I'm very grateful to God that he pulled me out of it before it was too late. So.
Dude, you don't have a family. You have a community.
That's right. A little basketball team in the works, right?
So you've done a great job at not only replacing yourself, but, you know, just buffering against any of your kids not having kids.
Right, and replacing several childless liberals on my blog. So, I feel sad for the people who don't know this joy. It's sad.
Yeah, I mean, just staying on that for a second. You know, when you turn 20 and you go, oh, I'm gonna first study and I'm gonna find a job and I'm gonna build a career and I'm gonna party a bit, and then, you know, then I'll settle down. I wonder where that switch happened.
It's a good question. And I had kind of an accelerated version of that. You know, people don't even believe me when I say the stupid things that I did in childhood. But by the time I was like literally 12 years old, and my friends from middle school can attest to this, I was living in Brazil at the time. You know, I would sneak out of my apartment. We'd get a taxi. We'd go into the bars with fake IDs and drink. So I got a lot of that out of my system before I was even an adult. In retrospect, I look back like, man, you were so stupid. How could you have done that stuff? But I'm grateful in a way, because I got all of those idiot ideas out of my system. I realized how bankrupt it was. And then in my early adulthood, I was able to move in a better direction, a wiser direction. And I hope and pray that my children won't have to learn that through hard experience. You know, I'm very serious about hopefully getting my children on the right path without having to learn the hard way all of the lessons that I learned as a young, rebellious moron, for lack of a better term. And you know, I know you can't protect them from all those things, but you hope that you can impart some of that wisdom to them before they make really, really stupid mistakes as well.
So having a family is the true sustainable development.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and if you read the UN's literature, this is the kind of stuff they're teaching. I was looking here. I have the Agenda 21 book for children published by UNESCO. And it literally has a drawing in there of a bunch of Hindu deities up on the clouds. And the storks are delivering these babies and the cities are burning. And on the page adjacent to it, it says the earth groans every time it registers another birth. Right? They're teaching our children that having babies is bad for the planet, that it's unsustainable, that they're going to have a big carbon footprint. And you know, even if you do have babies, they're going to have a terrible life because of climate change. It's bonkers. It's insane. It's evil. But absolutely, having children is the true sustainable development, because that is what perpetuates society. That is what perpetuates civilization. And by the way, it also helps solve some of these real and obviously imagined problems, because the more minds you have working on problems, the more likely you are to come up with good solutions to those problems. So
diversity.
Right. Yes, very much. But no, I mean, it's just so many lies from the pit of hell causing so much needless suffering. And the sooner people wake up, the better.
Don't you hate how these otherwise normal terms have been hijacked? Diversity. I mean, you can't say that word anymore without laughing.
Yeah, that's right. And this is the UN's modus operandi, right? If you look at the UN's lexicon, it's all abusive manipulation of language. And I first noticed this in college. I was studying journalism, and you know, we're talking about peacekeeping troops. Well, what is a peacekeeping troop? It's a soldier carrying a machine gun, flying in an attack helicopter, or riding in a tank. Why are you going to call it a peacekeeping soldier? Well, because that sounds less offensive than a war-making soldier. You know, in our AP style book, which is it's the main style book that all journalists are supposed to use, you don't have pro-life activists. You have anti-abortion rights. Well, when you frame killing your babies as a right, nobody wants to be against rights. So you see this horrible manipulation of language. And I think that's one of the ways they've been so successful in selling these terrible lies to people, is just manipulating language, manipulating people's emotions, manipulating people's decent and good intentions for evil purposes. And to, you know, to go back to what they've done to women, I heard a very interesting argument by an evolutionary biologist, and I don't believe in Darwin's theory of evolution, by the way. I did for almost all my life until I studied it and realized what a fraud that was. But he made a really interesting point. He said, you know, women were programmed biologically, I thought that was an interesting word, to defend and protect their children above all else. And now they don't have children because they've been told that children are oppressive, you should finish your career and then think about it. And so now they defend these stupid ideologies like they would defend their children. These ideologies that are totally fraudulent, totally based on lies. And so that's why they're getting like so emotionally attached to these crazy ideas like diversity, like inclusion, that, you know, really are meaningless bastardizations of what the words were actually supposed to mean. It's terrible what they've done.
I'm thinking about your book, Indoctrinating Our Children to Death. And I wonder if you have a sequel, Indoctrinating Our Adults to Death, because this seems to be entirely true.
Yeah, and they are still, you know, the indoctrination process begins very young in the government indoctrination camps, and then later with, you know, entertainment and stuff. But then once you get to be an adult, you've already been dumbed down to the point where you're very easy to manipulate. And so then they just put, you know, some fake news on CNN and you say, oh, okay, that's good. So I think the two are inextricably linked, right? The fake news wouldn't work on people who had a real education. It wouldn't work on people who had received basic training in, you know, just the fundamentals of logic, the fundamentals of reason. People who had been trained to detect logical fallacies would watch CNN and they'd fall out of their chair laughing that somebody could believe such nonsense. And so these two are synergistic. It's a symbiotic relationship between the indoctrination of the young people, the dumbing down of the young people, and the gullibility of the adults who still believe the lies that the government is selling, that the fake news is selling. You can't have one without the other, right?
I'm reminded of your former president, George W. Bush. He famously said, "Is our children learning?"
Right. As he's reading the upside down book on goats to the children on 9/11. Oh, man. Yeah, it's just astounding.
Alex, what's the moral of the story here?
I mean, for me, the big takeaway has really become clear. The big takeaway is we need to be reading our Bibles for truth and wisdom and discernment on all of these issues. You know, when the Bible in the final verses of Matthew, Jesus gives us what's called the Great Commission, where we are to make disciples of all nations, baptizing in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and then teaching them to obey all that were observed, some translations say, all that God has commanded us. You know, I think that's really our mission statement. And that manifests itself in a lot of different ways. I would tell people that really begins in your home. You know, are you discipling your children properly? Ephesians 6:4 says you are to raise up your children in the fear, the discipline, the nurture, the admonition of the Lord. Deuteronomy 6, Deuteronomy 11, you're to teach your children diligently about God and about his laws and about what he's done for us. When you wake up in the morning, when you're walking by the way, when you're sitting down at night, when you're eating your food, at all times we are to be doing these things. And then from there, we move on outward to our communities, to our states or provinces, to our nations, and to the whole world. And I think that's really the real reason why we're here. I love the way the Presbyterians put it in the Westminster Catechism, right? What is the chief end of man? Like, why are we here? What's our purpose in life? Their answer was brilliant. It's a distillation of the most profound biblical wisdom. We are here, it says, to glorify God and enjoy him forever. So for me, that's the big takeaway. That's what all the other stuff is for. And we find ourselves in a war. We're warring against Satan, we're warring against the world, and we're warring against the flesh, our sinful tendencies and desires. And so we have a lot of responsibilities. Now, the Bible talks about we are one body with many members, and every member has a different function. The eye can't say to the ear, like, hey, what are you doing, right? We all have our own function. And so I can't tell anybody what you're supposed to be doing, what's your function. You have to determine that with God and in prayer and reading his word. But find out what your function is, and then do your best with God's help to carry it out. And maybe your function is being a successful businessman and putting money into the expansion of the kingdom and the diffusion of knowledge and the expansion of civilization. Maybe your function is to be a missionary. Maybe your function is to be a journalist. Maybe your function is to be a teacher. Maybe your function is to be a mom and raise up a group of children in the fear and the admonition and the discipline of the Lord. What could be a higher calling than that? But so for me, that's the big takeaway. We have to stop falling for these lies that are instilled in our minds from the moment we can turn on a TV or enter a kindergarten. And we have to free ourselves from that. And the sooner we do, the better off all of us will be.
How can my audience follow you?
Well, thank you so much. The easiest way is at my website, libertysentinel.org. Sentinel is S-E-N-T-I-N-E-L. People can sign up for our free newsletter. I'm on X at alexnewman_J-O-U. I serve as a senior editor at the New American Magazine. That's thenewamerican.com. We got a free daily headline so people can stay up on the critical news of the day. And then for folks who are interested in finding some different alternatives for educating your children. My family and me, we use one called Classical Conversations. It's the biggest in the world, over 135,000 students. I serve as a senior fellow there, and it's a great joy and a great honor to be able to work with them. It's a total rethinking of education, right? I love the way they put it. The purpose of education is to know God and make him known. All the other stuff falls into place on its own after that. So those are some of the ways. And then I think X, I mentioned alexnewman_J-O-U.
Okay. Well, Alex Newman, thank you for joining me in the trenches and for a smooth conversation.
Amen. It's an honor and a pleasure. Thank you very much, Jerem. I appreciate it.